You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The world is fraught with tension and conflict, but that doesn't mean we're all doomed. We're taking a look at reasons for optimism this hour. But first, a big reason to be optimistic at Wisconsin Public Radio. Listeners are becoming members at this very minute. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with my colleague John Gatto. You count on the Ideas Network for great conversations, and it is your gift of any amount that makes these discussions possible. Listener support is the single largest piece of the budget here, and that's why your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
One by one, Kate, listeners are indeed calling, going online, pledging to support Wisconsin Public Radio this morning. We had six people walk through the door in this last hour. Thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. And frankly, thanks to all of you who have given already during this drive. We're into the second day already. We're on track, and we want to stay on track. Mm-hmm. We have a goal this hour of 15 pledges. So please be the first one to make that pledge right now.
Help pay for the programs that you rely on every day. And you'll be also entered into that drawing for a $500 grocery gift card when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A large chunk of the income necessary, the revenue necessary to keep Wisconsin Public Radio going, in fact, the largest slice, is listener support. Think about that for a moment. Your support and that of your friends and neighbors who listen to Wisconsin Public Radio make it possible. So while all of our funding sources, including the state and federal government and businesses and others, are really important, your contribution makes a huge difference. WPR is the amazing service that it is thanks to your support, listener support. Keep independent, high-quality programs like this one on the air when you give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And here's a cool thing. Let the world know you're a WPR fan when you wear your cool new WPR t-shirt. Ask for yours when you give $10 a month or more, or a one-time gift of $120. Your gift supports the programs that you care about, and you get the limited edition t-shirt. It starts with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
There are so many good reasons to give to Wisconsin Public Radio, and this drive, one of them is that your donation of any amount gets you entered in a drawing for a $500 gift card to a grocery store near you. You'll have five chances to win. We hope you'll donate to enter, but you don't have to donate to win. You can send in a postcard with your name, address, email, and phone to WPR Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Sustainers, we've got you covered. You're automatically entered. Check out the rules and details at wpr.org/drawing. Your donation of any amount right now gets you entered. Here's how to give.
Yes, go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. So easy to go to the phone if you didn't have your pen at the ready to make your pledge. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with my colleague John Gatto. We're asking for your support during this winter membership drive because it's what makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. That's clear, plain and simple. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount is right for you, that is the amount you choose.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with a few minutes of your time, just a few minutes. All we need is your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to contribute, and how you'd like to pay for it.
Your gift supports the stories. It supports the programs that keep you connected to the world. As we heard earlier, it's the brain food from Francis from Madison. Give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
All right, we've got that first pledge in already. already, so the ice has been broken. Now it's your turn to make that pledge right now. We're looking for your call and 13 more in this hour. You make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're not a sustainer, become one right now. It's easy to set up. It's convenient. Ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift is powerful. It truly makes a difference. So give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks for your support. The pattern of history will tell us that this too shall pass. Most challenges will be solved. Catastrophes, whether they're man-made or natural or a combination of both, they too are temporary. Greg Easterbrook is a writer and national correspondent. He's contributed to The Atlantic for almost 40 years. He's written dozens of pieces for The New York Times, Reuters, and other media outlets. Last year, he was elected to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. He's author of 10 books. His new one, it's out yesterday. It's called It's Better Than It Looks, Reasons for Optimism in an Age of Fear. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kate. Glad to be here.
Well, you've written this entire book, more than 300 pages, to make an argument to look at the world with more an optimistic lens. So why did you set up this argument?
Well, I've been working on this book, Kate, for 5 years, but in 16, when Donald Trump was elected, I was really struck. You remember the negative flavor of the campaign language that he used, that America was in the worst, to quote him, America was in the worst condition in the country's history, that everything that happens is always bad. He repeatedly used the phrase, everything is always down, down, down. 63 million people believed that and voted for him and made him president. And I'm sitting there thinking the country has never been in better condition. 2016 was the best year ever for the social circumstances of the United States, followed only by 2017, which was even better. But not only did 63 million people believe Donald Trump's claim that the country was in terrible shape, polling data consistently shows that for about 15 years, the majority of Americans have believed that the United States is in terrible condition and declining. And that's just factually not what's happening. I think what opinions you hold is a choice that you make. If you want to believe that the sky is orange, that's a choice you can make. But it's better to understand life and to appreciate our role in it, to base our opinions on facts. And factually, the country is in excellent condition.
So why do you think that there is this universal pessimism that you're seeing?
Well, I propose several possibilities, and it's better than it looks. And I'll point out that it wasn't just Donald Trump in 2016. The United Kingdom voted to withdraw from the European Union in the same year. Polls showed that the majority of Britons believed that the country was going downhill and that the European Union was the cause. What has the European Union done since it was created in 1957? It's prevented war, an organization that has led to prosperity and peace. People were convinced that there was something horrible about that. So I proposed several theories on why it is that we're inclined to believe the worst. One of them is simply our conditioning of our life, almost evolutionary. If you expect the worst, you're not disappointed. If the worst happens, that's what you expected. If something good happens, then you feel good about it. So, you know, your grandmother taught you to expect the worst, and that's we're all kind of taught to do that. I think there's human nature includes a lot of self-pity, where there's a lot of self-pity involved in feeling that things are terrible, even though the current, when I say that the country's never been in better shape, I certainly don't mean that everything's fine. There's all kinds of problems and all kinds of individuals and families who have very severe problems with money or health or stress or other things. But would anyone alive today trade places with any generation of the past? I don't think so. But
and to acknowledge in your book that there are these massive problems out there in the world, why do you say it's never too late to change the world?
Well, one of the things I try to do is show the distinction between optimism and pessimism. Optimism does not mean that you're a Pollyanna and you go around smiling all the time and you're always cheerful. Optimists can be cynical. I'm pretty cynical about a lot of things. An optimist can be angry if, you know, people who are angry about the Parkland mass shooting, they should be angry. That kind of thing should make you furious. But an optimist believes that problems can be solved. Pessimists believe that problems will overwhelm us and all we can do is run away and hide, which is the Donald Trump build a wall solution. Optimists believe that things can be fixed. So I spend a lot of first half of the book, I show the types of reforms that have worked in the past to improve health outcomes, education, reduce pollution, reduce crime, and so on. And then I take the lessons of those reforms and apply them to the problems of the present, climate change, inequality, and so on. And I come to the optimistic conclusion that things like climate change and inequality can be corrected.
Well, let's talk about the physical state of the planet, because Wisconsin has a rich history in conservation. But still here, you know, people build homes, we build roads, developers try to fill in wetlands, and farmers plow the land, raising herds of cattle. What do you say to the idea that human beings are destroying nature?
I don't think that's true. Human beings are certainly altering nature. We're altering nature with amazing rapidity, but nature wouldn't have stayed the same whether we existed or not. Nature has been altering itself for billions of years. We're just doing it in an artificial rather than a natural way. All the environmental indicators that are objective in the United States and most of Western Europe, and in some, but of course not all parts of the world, have been positive for years, if not decades. Every one of them, air pollution, water, etc., with the big exception of greenhouse gases. The indicators in greenhouse gases are negative, and that's something that we have to deal with. But in general, smog, for example, winter in the last 25 years, winter smog in the United States is down 77%. Summer smog is down 23%, and that's even as the population has increased by almost a third. So you would otherwise, other things being equal, you would expect more smog. Instead, we have less smog, and we still have very rapid economic growth leading to the kinds of development that you just mentioned, Kate.
Well, we often hear people firmly deny humanity's role in climate change, and you're taking a more nuanced approach to it. You write, perhaps climate calamity awaits, but more likely the global warming threat will be looked back on as one that was managed without sacrifice of living standards. How can we have it both ways? How do you achieve that?
Human impact on climate is now scientifically proven. 25 years ago, it was not. 15 years ago, there was still some controversy. For the last 10 years, it's been open and shut. There's no doubt among serious thinkers that human behavior is impacting climate. What we don't know is how bad it will be. It could be really bad. It could be only moderately bad. There's this tiny chance that climate change will be good for us. I mean, a tiny chance. I wouldn't put my chips on that particular outcome. But you can think that climate change is real and also think that it can be controlled. If you're an optimist, greenhouse gases fundamentally are an air pollution problem. And all previous air pollution problems, smog, acid rain, airborne particulates, etc., they have all been addressed faster and more cheaply than anybody expected. So the same, I think, awaits us with greenhouse gases. There have so far been no serious attempt to address them. If we take serious steps, I think we'll see pretty rapid progress.
Let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Lori in Vernon County. Hi, Lori.
Oh, good morning. I had to call in about his comment that everything is really okay and nature would change. Nature left on its own would be going toward more diversity, because that's how nature works. That's how it fills the niches that are left open, and it becomes more diverse. We humans are making the largest mass extinction ever. So, you know, we are like, you know, multiple asteroids on this planet. So to say that the environment is getting better is just, it's just not true. Sorry.
Lori, thanks so much for calling in. Greg Easterbrook, I mean, Lori's bringing up a point, and it's also very emotional when she hears that you saying this.
Well, there isn't any doubt that humanity is altering nature. We ourselves, nature invented us, and we are now altering nature. We're introducing action by design into the natural world, and some of our actions are good, some of our actions are really stupid. When you look at species extinction, I have a full page of statistics in the book from the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, which is the main organization that keeps the books of species gain and loss. And it does find a fair number of species that are stressed and worth concern and worth special efforts to preserve. The predicted mass extinctions that people thought would happen as a result of human behavior just simply haven't occurred. Now, there's no way of knowing what the future will hold. Maybe they'll occur in the future yet at some point, but so far our impact on species has been a little less than predicted. You mainly find human impact with primates, great apes, bonobos, etc., where the creatures are most similar to us, and they seem to be doing very poorly as they come into contact with us.
Even though there are many positive indicators that we're learning about this hour, there are some outliers out there that would make life drastically worse, such as an atomic bomb. We're talking with author and national correspondent Greg Easterbrook this hour. His new book is called It's Better Than It Looks. Are you less optimistic now, or do today's circumstances inspire hope? What context should people think about when they consider the state of life in the modern age? Share your perspective, 800-642-1234. Tweet at us, WPR Mornings. Back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. A lot of times, Americans think the glass is half empty, have a negative worldview. We're hearing a different side to this hour of on the Ideas Network. But the glass is more than half full here at Wisconsin Public Radio as we fill up with the goodness of listener members. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with my colleague John Gatto. Your gift right now, so important. As the single largest piece of the budget, gifts from people like you are what keep the programs like this one that we're having, this conversation, and all the programs you enjoy going strong. So invest in your future listening with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Indeed, our glass is approaching that halfway full point in this hour. We've had 6 pledges already, 9 more to go. So we're hoping that we're optimistic that you'll make that pledge and get in on this special challenge, pledge goal that we have in this hour of the morning show. Make your gift to support the programs that you enjoy, the conversations that you rely on every day right here on The Morning Show. Make a pledge now.
WPR programs, they are listener-powered. It is the energy behind them that propels them forward. That means that your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It makes a difference. And when you give right now, you'll be entered to win a $500 grocery gift card.
How many times have you been listening to the Ideas Network and heard something that literally stopped you in your tracks, something that was, well, really interesting, something that you perhaps agreed with or maybe disagreed with? I'm talking to some of those of you listening this hour because the phones are lighting up here in many ways with people's comments. Well, we strive every day for programs that open your eyes and engage your brain and programs that do and topics that do, in fact, affect your life. This kind of radio happens only with your financial support. So be part of it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, they stretch us. They make us think. You first joined the WPR community as a listener. You tune in every day, and after a while, it's time to join the community as a donor. Funding the great programs on WPR is a group effort.
We do this together, and we do it one pledge at a time, $1 at a time, in fact. If you've never given before, start with a donation of perhaps, $100 or $10 a month. That's $120. Whatever amount is right for you is what we expect that you make that pledge at today. It's easy. Make the gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The 2018 WPR t-shirt is a two-tone orange design on a dark gray background. It shows how Wisconsin is at the center of everything we do here at WPR. Imagine yourself wearing the new t-shirt. How do you feel?
I feel like an interesting person that people would want to talk to.
It's like a team t-shirt for something that I really believe in.
I feel proud. Proud of Wisconsin, proud of public radio, and proud of the community that we all create together.
Ask for your WPR t-shirt right now. Find out how great it feels to show off your WPR pride. Pledge $10 a month or make a one-time gift of $120. Here's how.
Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs that you count on. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with John Gatto. We are raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs that you enjoy on the air. So whether your pledge is $10 a month, whether it is $100 a month, we absolutely appreciate and we do count on your gift.
And we are oh so close to that halfway point, whether it's in the glass or halfway in the hour, however you want to look at it. We have 8 pledges in, 7 more to go, yours and 6 more to meet the goal for this hour. Your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is such an important part of making this program and all of the programs that you hear possible on Wisconsin Public Radio.
In addition to funding the programs, your pledge of any amount gets you entered into this drawing for a $500 grocery gift card. We'll be picking 5 winners, by the way, and sustainers. You are in. You're automatically entered. If you're not a sustainer yet, don't hold back. Sign up right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As Jake from Sturgeon Bay says, giving is, he's giving for the content. That's what it's all about. Listener support, the single largest source of funding that brings you the content that you're listening to. Make your pledge right now. It's very important at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you.
Yes, thank you. One of the core conflicts in our attitudes surrounding life is on a spectrum between catastrophe and dynamism. We're learning about why we should think humanity is leaning toward dynamism this hour of the morning show. Author and national correspondent Greg Easterbrook stays with us. His new book is It's Better Than It Looks, Reasons for Optimism in an Age of Fear. You can join in. Are you an optimist or a pessimist in your worldview? How do you view your experience compared to past generations? 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Greg Easterbrook, let us look for a moment on economic inequality. We know that we've got problems with this in the U.S. We've heard for a long time now that about the top 1% of earners, you argue that former President Obama advocated for the rich paying more in taxes while taking every deduction possible. So wealth inequality is not a recent problem, certainly not only under President Trump. What do we know about income inequality and how we see our worldview?
Well, there isn't any doubt that income inequality has increased a lot in the United States in the last 30 years, and high degrees of income inequality are not good for society. And don't take my word for that, because I'm quoting Milton Friedman, the crown prince of capitalist economics, who said 50 years ago that a high degree of income inequality would be bad for the United States, and we certainly have that now. There's a separate question that I delve into, and it's better than it looks, about buying power. Buying power matters more to middle class and ordinary people than income does. And buying power is calculated by you take your income, but minus taxes plus benefits times consumer prices divided by your household size. If you only measure income, and income is the most important measure, there's no doubt. If you only measure income, the top is accelerating away from everybody else, and the middle is stalled. If you measure buying power, you find that in the post-war era, the buying power of the American middle class has increased just about exactly 3% a year, just about exactly every year. Buying power, the picture's not so bad, but an income, yeah, pre-tax income, the top 1% are grabbing more all the time.
Well, let's go to the phones. Back to the phones. Let's go to Eugene in Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning, Kate. You kind of beat me to it on my comment. What I was going to say was what you could buy for a dollar in 1950, what you could buy for a dollar in 1950 would now cost you about $20 today. Wages have not kept up with inflation, any way, manner, or form.
Eugene, thanks for the comment, bringing in inflation to this conversation. Greg Easterbrook.
Well, in my book, I talk about the misery index. Your listeners may or may not be familiar with it. The misery index is the index is a simple metric that combines unemployment with inflation, and unemployment and inflation are the two worst things that can happen in the economy for the average person. So the misery index, because you're combining those two numbers, the lower the number, the better. So on the day that Donald Trump was elected, the misery index not only was low, it was the lowest it had been in the United States since Dwight Eisenhower. The combination of unemployment and inflation were both unusually low, and yet people thought the economy was falling apart. If you look at the 60s, 70s, and 80s, when the misery index was much higher than it was in 2016 and much higher than it is today. Anybody of the 1970s would want to live in a country that, as currently we have, has 4.3% unemployment and 1% inflation. The numbers were much larger in many recent decades of the past. So if you view the economy that way, things are awfully good right now.
Well, let's broaden out here to look at that compared to the whole world. Let's bring in Rick in Park Falls. Hi, Rick.
Okay. I'm not sure how long you can give me, but number one, there is no such thing as the top 1%. What it is the top 20%, the 80th percentile of the income distribution, when they have a really good year, they pop into the 1%, and then they pop back down into the 80th percentile. What we're facing is the creation of a very strong professional ruling class, which contains people like bankers, lawyers, accountants, professors, Hollywood actors, people like that. We're turning basically in the direction of a Latin American country where you have some very, very wealthy people at the top who have all kinds of government programs and benefits to keep them there. I'm talking dozens of these programs, including unfair zoning in big cities like New York and San Francisco, which makes it impossible for the so-called rich people to fall out of that income class, and it's making the rest of us relatively poor by comparison. And this was accelerated by the changes in the banking laws, by repeal of Glass-Steagall by the Clintons, which led to the Great Recession that took $6 trillion out of the housing market, threw 6 million Americans out of their families.
And Rick, you bring up a whole bunch of points here that I want Greg to be able to respond to. So let's bring into Greg with what you're referring to here.
Sure, Kate. I spent some time, and it's better than it looks, on the research of a Serbian economist named Branko Milanković, who studies global inequality. And what he finds is somewhat what you think and somewhat counterintuitive. He does find that inequality is rising in the United States, that income is tending to concentrate at the very top. Globally, he finds that inequality is declining. We should be much more aware in the United States of the fact that extreme poverty has fallen in the larger world by a very dramatic amount in the last 25 years. Most of the decline of extreme poverty has occurred in China and India, and China and India are not immediate to us here in the United States. But if you look at the larger picture of the globe, inequality is declining across the globe. And again, I'm quoting this economist, Branko Milanković. Across the globe, the very top of all societies are increasing their intake of income. And who stalled? Stalled across the globe is the 75th to 90th percentile of income, which Milanković considers the global middle class, compared to the fact that the number of people who are poor is so vastly larger than the number of people who are in the middle class. And it's the global middle class at 75th to 90th percentile of income who form the main voting block of the United States and European Union. So those people feel like the people above them are gaining more money, the people below them are gaining more money, they themselves are not, and that may explain a lot about the discontented feeling that we see in the United States and United Kingdom, at least.
Is there this pessimism that you're seeing across the globe, or is it more confined to us here in the States?
No, if you look at the whole human family, China and India both, their economies are roaring. Those are the two largest countries in the world. India is the largest democracy in world history. It's a very fitful kind of democracy. China's social circumstances are crazy, is the nicest thing I can think to say about the social circumstances of China. But in both of those places, huge numbers of people are graduating out of extreme poverty very quickly. There's a real hopeful, optimistic sense in those places because the lack of food, clothing, and shelter is being overcome in a single generation.
You are with us for this conversation on why the world perhaps is better off than what our 24/7 news cycle would suggest. We're going to continue the conversation with author Greg Easterbrook in just a moment. The book is It's Better Than It Looks, Reasons for Optimism in an Age of Fear. The book was out yesterday. But first, there is a rosier outlook here at WPR with the winter membership drive in full swing. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with my colleague John Gatto. At WPR, listener contributions are the single largest source of funding. Your gift keeps these programs that you value, including this one, on the air. So make your contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And just in case there's any doubt in what Kate just said and what you're hearing, yes, WPR is listener supported. You're a listener. We count on your support, the support of your friends and neighbors and others who listen to WPR to bring you this kind of programming that's on the air day in and day out. When you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make this hour and many more hours possible, not just for yourself, but for the entire community. Choose an amount that works for you, that represents the value that you have in Wisconsin Public Radio, just a few minutes of your time as well, and then make your pledge.
Well, the glass is certainly more than half full here. We need six more pledges this hour, so we're going to try to stay on track with our goal. Thank you if you've already given.
And, you know, if you haven't yet, as we've said, right now is the perfect time to do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. For a variety of reasons, your gift funds the programs that you enjoy, this hour in particular. And as an added bonus, you'll automatically be entered in a drawing for a $500 grocery gift card from a grocery someplace in your neighborhood. You'll have five chances to win in that drawing, by the way.
Consider sharing your appreciation of the lifelong learning you get from WPR. Make a 9XM Leadership Circle gift of $100 a month or $1,200 or more every year and provide an important piece of funding for the programs that we all rely on.
We're inviting you to work together with us and with your neighbors to build on this powerful resource that benefits you and many others throughout Wisconsin. Make your leadership gift now, if you can, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
First of all, I really believe in what Wisconsin Public Radio does. When I would listen to the pledge drives every year, I would often think, oh yeah, I should call in, or go online and pledge, and then eventually I would do that. When it came around this year, I just thought, you know, this would be so much easier to just do a monthly donation sustaining public radio. Being a sustainer is good for me because I know that I'm doing my fair share. Even if it's not the largest contribution, it's a steady monthly contribution that I know is helping to keep the station on the air. I'm John from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I enjoy being a WPR sustainer, and I think you will too.
You can pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with my colleague John Gatto. Listener support is the single biggest source of funding for the WPR programs that you rely on. That's why your support during this winter membership drive is so important. Maybe your gift is $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
Five more pledges to go in the this hour. We've got 15, 16, 17 minutes to do that. You have just a couple of moments right now. It's all it'll take of your time to make that pledge. And we hope that you'll do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And as an added bonus for supporting the programs that you love, your pledge of any amount gets you entered in a drawing for a $500 grocery gift card. In fact, you'll have 5 chances to win that gift card. Pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. A shout out to all the sustainers out there. You're automatically entered.
And you can support the programs you value and also ask for that new WPR t-shirt as your thank you gift when you make a contribution of $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your gift is powerful. It really makes a difference. Give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks for your support. We're understanding a perspective, a more upbeat view of this world here on The Morning Show. Not everything is gloom and doom, as most indicators show that things are actually better than we might perceive on a day-to-day basis. The book is It's Better Than It Looks. Greg Easterbrook stays with us for the conversation. He's author of 10 books and is a national correspondent with almost 40 years contributing to The Atlantic. You can contribute to the conversation, 800-642-1234. Do you think the world is getting worse? What makes you think that? What examples prove to you that we are not better off? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet at us at WPR Mornings. So, Greg, American political discussions are in such a full friction right now. President Trump also ran on a campaign promise to drain the swamp, saying Washington, D.C. was the enemy. He's not the first person to pit the American people against their own people. How did former President Ronald Reagan have a similar strategy to blame Washington?
I spent a chapter in this book trying to describe how the sort of pessimistic conventional wisdom evolved in the United States. And I consider Reagan's experience not as president, but in the 1950s, that your listeners who know history will know that when he was making the transition from acting to politics, he was the host of the old General Electric Theater, one of the first prominent primetime television shows, and then he traveled around the country giving political speeches sponsored by General Electric, which had a different kind of relationship to politics then than it does today. And what Reagan reported finding was that when he talked to audiences, if he told them Washington was to blame for their problems, that made them happy. That made him more popular. They didn't want to hear that there was anything wrong with their own communities. We all want to like our own communities. They didn't want to hear that there was anything wrong with their own friends or schools or healthcare services. And people sure didn't want to hear that they were to blame for their own situations. What they wanted to hear was that Washington was to blame for everything. And Reagan adjusted his pitch and began to use a form of language and rhetoric that blamed everything on Washington, and it turned out to be incredibly successful. It not only made him a two-term president, but it's taken over American politics for a full generation now. You run for office by blaming Washington. And so we've created this sort of consensual political illusion that everything is bad and Washington is to blame. If you look at the larger world, if you leave the United States, people who don't live in the United States consider us the most prosperous, powerful, an impressive nation ever created, and it can't be that we're the most prosperous, powerful, and impressive nation of all time, and also that our capital is corrupt and inefficient. But we've decided to embrace, we as a body politic, have decided to embrace that illusion, and among other things, it gave us Donald Trump.
Let's go to Steve now on this line in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm just curious on what the guests' thoughts are on the media and the pessimism. I mean, the old saying that talks about if it bleeds, it leads. And if you look, especially the past year, even 2 years, really, in relation to how the media treats, you know, as an example, Donald Trump with the Trump derangement syndrome, that here's a racist man in the White House who's going to destroy the lives of every minority. Or you even look at the shooting in Parkland last week. The odds of getting killed by a gun are so minuscule if you're not in the gang or commit suicide. It's a drop in the bucket. You look at how there's a patriarchy that people are pushing, like all women who are looked at and treated terribly and have no chance to succeed, or minorities. You look at the Republican side in relation to, you know, transgenders going into the bathroom and suddenly everyone's going to be molested.
Steve, lots of themes you're bringing up here, but what about the media role, Greg?
It's certainly true that the media has always tended to emphasize negative stories, and with good reason. Negative information is what you most urgently need to know. Suppose you were looking at one television set was reporting a fire 1 mile away from you, and the other television set was reporting the decline of rural poverty in China. Which broadcast are you going to watch? So this has been, to a certain extent, was there with us with the media. And bear in mind, if you go back and look at the coverage of 2016, the mainstream media was relentlessly negative about Hillary Clinton, in the same way that it's relentlessly negative now about Donald Trump. The new factor is social media. It's not only operating to a different set of standards, whether you like or don't like television news or the newspapers, sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. At least they're trying to figure out what's true and check sources. In social media, there's no requirement to check sources at all. So now we have this new form of media that's largely fabricated. And rather than it's sitting on the table like the newspaper does, or sitting on a cabinet like a television does, the new form of media follows us around the house. If you get the morning newspaper and put it on your table and there's a negative story on the front page and you get up and walk into the backyard, the newspaper does not get up with you and follow you. Your phone does follow you to the backyard, and your phone has nothing but negative information on it, and I think it tends to turn the United States negative.
On the topic of technology and how it's impacted our nation and the world, let's go to Rob in Grafton. Hi, Rob.
Hi. Thanks for having my call.
Sure.
I wanted to just comment on my wife and I do some travel, and recently we went on a trip to Thailand and Cambodia, and I was really kind of just surprised and really kind of happy to see that there was a lot of use of smartphones and technology. The internet infrastructure there was actually quite substantial and speedy, and I was just hoping to comment on that.
So the other side of technology, Greg?
Internet's been great for the developing world because there are large sections of the world, as you know, as you travel, that don't have telephone lines, and to install telephone lines to the entire world would be a greater challenge than to install cell service to the entire world. So, yeah, we have human family is 7 billion people now. I think the latest figure is that 4 billion of them carry telephones with them everywhere they go, and in countries that don't have telephone poles and well-established telephone service, this has been very useful.
Well, the fact is, though, people are killing one another every day. We hear about soldiers dying in combat, suicide bombings, quite routine, especially in the Middle East or South Asia. Anne from Green Bay called, and she brings up the topic of violence and war. She couldn't stay with us. She says, we should ask the people in Syria how things are for them. How would you respond to Anne?
Syria is in terrible shape right now. Burma, Myanmar is in terrible shape right now. Parts of North Africa are in terrible shape. On the whole, you won't believe this from the tenor of cable news, but war has declined both in intensity and frequency over the last 25 years. And that's if you take into account civilian casualties, whether direct or indirect. Your odds, anyone's odds, and not just in the United States, but anybody, people in Afghanistan, your odds of dying as a result of war have declined steadily over the last 25 years and are now pretty much at the lowest level in human history. Military spending has declined almost every one of the last 30 years. And the number of nuclear bombs in the world has declined pretty dramatically over the last 30 years. Syria is an awful, awful exception to a general rule of steadily less combat. Now, that's only been happening over 25, 30 years, so maybe that's not long enough to be sure that it really represents a trend. But the recent trend, the recent transition, at least, has been from more violence to less violence.
So, Greg, as we wrap up this conversation, what can we do right now to change our worldview, to shift our perspective on the state of the world?
I think the key point that I try to make, and it's better than it looks, is that being an optimist does not mean being complacent. It doesn't mean saying, oh, well, I'm optimistic because everything's fine. All our problems will take care of themselves. All our problems will not take care of themselves. Being an optimist means you think that reforms can work to find solutions to our problems. And I think when we look at climate change, look at inequality, refugee movements, the wars that remain in the world, the general state of conflagration that is the Middle East, the world has lots of problems, and there's sure to be more problems coming. My key point is that we can be optimistic that we can fix those problems, but nothing will happen unless we act.
Greg, thank you so much for making time for us.
Sure thing.
Greg Easterbrook is a writer and national correspondent, contributed to The Atlantic for almost 40 years, written dozens of pieces for media outlets. Last year, he was elected to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. His new book is It's Better Than It Looks, Reasons for Optimism in an Age of Fear. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. And now let's check in on the winter membership drive that is in full swing. John Gatto is with me on this. Listener support is the single biggest source of funding for WPR programs that you rely on, and that's why your support during this winter membership drive is so important. So maybe your gift is $10 a month or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
And you should make that pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to help us close out this hour. We've got great momentum going. Mm-hmm. We've been thanking those of you who have already called. I'd like to thank you in advance for your pledge, which I hope you'll do in the next few minutes before we wrap up this hour. Kate, I want to say thanks to you also, because what a fascinating hour, a conversation that you just guided
thank
us
you.
Through. And,
appreciate
and
it.
You know, that in and of itself is a good reason. Support all of our hosts who work so hard to bring these conversations to life for you as a listener, day in and day out. WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is how you can show your support for our programs, for our hosts. And, you know, it's that incentive to keep us going. Make your pledge now.
Well, here's something to be really excited and proud of. We're two up on our goal. We've we've exceeded our hourly goal this hour.
I said we had momentum, and
we have some really great momentum going here. You make WPR possible when you give. Keep this momentum going at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now that you've made that decision to support Wisconsin Public Radio, you might be looking for the best way to make your gift. Well, the answer is to become a sustainer. You decide on a monthly amount that you'd like to have charged back to your bank account or your credit card, and then you get it set up. It's easy to do.
And if you're not a sustainer, become one right now. It's easy to set up, as John said, convenient, ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or from your credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
At Wisconsin Public Radio, we ask you to decide how much to give. And no matter what you choose, you get 24 hours a day of news, talk, music, and entertainment in return. That's a great deal. Where do you wish you could get that kind of deal?
Just about anywhere. My education, a vacation, or anything really I could think about spending, I wish I could choose to pay.
Oh, beer?
A great Italian meal.
During this pledge drive, we ask you to contribute as generously as you can. And, unlike with other things, you'll always be the one to decide how much to give.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with John Gatto asking for your support during this winter membership drive because it is what makes the WPR programs that you rely on possible. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount it is that you choose, that is the right amount.
And do remember that in addition to funding the programs, your pledge of any amount right now gets you entered into a drawing for a $500 grocery gift card. We'll be picking five winners from throughout the region. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Not a sustainer yet? Well, sign up. Make a pledge. Become a sustainer. Get entered into that drawing at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's so much fun to hear the comments flowing in as people decide on what it is that compels them to be a listener member. What it is, make a difference right now at 888-202-2552. And thanks.